Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and I need to make an apology. I have been remiss over all these years on the air since 9/11 in not connecting the dots for myself. I've heard about the connections from the Denver Islamic community to Muslim terrorists. I've heard about those for all these years, but we have never done a show on the topic. I've never sufficiently informed myself on the topic. So I met a few months back a gentleman who I think is an expert on the topic. I met him at a local abortion mill, Planned Parenthood. And we discussed the Denver Muslim connection to leading Islamic terrorists. And since then, one of the elders of Denver Bible Church has invited Richard Blake to come to our church to make a couple announcements. He has a couple petitions. Richard's been an investigative reporter. He has received an award from Sonoma State University, part of the California State University system. He's even been on our competitor, Peter Boyles, on his show as a guest a few times. So to talk about the connection between the Denver Islamic Society and Muslim terrorists, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. Richard Blake, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, Richard, you're the expert. I have been preparing for today's show. So why don't we just begin with the highlights? And then I'd love to go through a Denver Post article that I missed, published a few years back, that you did not miss. So for the highlights, what is the broad brush connection between internationally known terrorists and the Denver Islamic community?
Okay, the Denver Islamic Society, at least according to the Post article, was founded by a guy named Homedan al-Turki. He's also called Prince Homedan al-Turki. He's been called a shirt-tail relative of the Saudi royal family.
And al-Turki, that's spelled with an I, so out like the country of Turkey, but T-U-R-K-I. Al-Turki is the founder?
Founder, yeah.
Of the Denver Islamic Society?
At least according to the Denver Post, yes.
That's the group that's down on South Birch Street in Denver?
Yes, that's correct.
Right?
Yeah. Homedan al-Turki, according to the Denver Post, is the founder of the Denver Islamic Society. He was arrested in Colorado for having an underage Indonesian girl chained to the water heater in his basement, holding her as a sex slave. First, he went to Colorado prison.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions.
Yeah, sure.
This is the Denver Islamic Society in Denver, down on South Birch?
Yes, just south of Evans on Birch.
And he is the founder.
He's the founder.
Of the Denver Islamic Society, and he was arrested for having a young Indonesian woman in his basement?
Yes.
He'd
purchased her in Saudi Arabia as a slave.
As a slave, and she was literally chained in his basement.
Right, exactly.
Chained to the...
water heater, yes.
Water heater.
Yes.
Wow, so he's arrested, so she is then liberated, obviously.
Liberated. She's underage.
She was rescued.
Yeah, she was rescued, yes.
As a sex slave.
Yes.
And this is not surprising from what we've seen of Muslim extremists, because, for example, in Iraq and Syria... this is what ISIS has been doing.
Exactly.
Selling young women, especially foreigners,
right,
as sex slaves.
Right.
And they issue their fatwas saying what you can do to these women.
Exactly.
I mean, it's as despicable as can be. We list some of these fatwas on our own website at kgov.com/terror. It's absolutely horrifying. So, Richard Blake, you're saying that the founder of the Denver Islamic Society, and it's not just that you're saying, this has been reported.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the guy was convicted. He's in prison.
Right.
The founder of the Denver Islamic Society was a rapist and guilty of sex trafficking.
Exactly, yes.
Wow. Until the girl was rescued.
And she was rescued, yes.
By Arapahoe County Sheriff's deputies?
Either that or Aurora PD. It was one of the two, yeah.
All right.
But anyway, according to a Fox News article, he brought up Anwar al-Awlaki, who was born in who was the imam there in the early 90s, right prior to 9/11.
Well, al-Awlaki, everyone who has paid any attention at all is extremely familiar with his name. Mm-hmm. Leading terrorist motivator. He's now dead. But you're saying there's a connection, because al-Awlaki, I know from the homework that you assigned me to read these articles, that he was a regular fixture at the local mosque.
He was the imam, which is Islamic pastors are called imams, yes.
Okay.
And he, from here, he made a lot of his tapes, which inspire terrorists and continue to inspire terrorists today, here while he was in Denver. From Denver, just prior to 9/11, he went to San Diego, where he met two of the 9/11 hijackers. Their names were Khaled al-Midher and Nawaf al-Hazmi, and this is from the Denver Post article.
Mm-hmm. Which I'd like for you and I to go through that article step by step in a couple minutes, because, Richard, they want to downplay all this because they're so pro-Islam.
Right, exactly.
Which is bizarre, but we've talked about that, and since the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and the media in America despises Christians, especially biblical, fundamentalist, evangelical Christians are hated, and Muslims hate Christians too, and Jews. So there's just this natural affinity, even though the Muslims would behead the members of our media, our left-wing liberal media, they have a fondness in their heart for Muslims.
Exactly. It almost is like a Stockholm syndrome in a way.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Right. So al-Awlaki and this al-Turki had a relationship. You say that al-Turki, actually the Denver Post reports, but he began to publish Anwar al-Awlaki's messages.
Yes, his lectures, his sermons on jihad and how Islam will be victorious, et cetera, et cetera.
On the afterlife. And the prophets.
Right,
and all
exactly,
that.
Yes.
Okay.
Right after 9/11, the FBI decided that al-Awlaki probably knew a lot about 9/11. In fact, one FBI agent described him as being central to 9/11. Mm. He condemned 9/11, which, and just.
Well, in public, that's what they do.
Yeah, and in public.
So they can continue operating.
Exactly. But he also fled the country in 2002 to avoid answering any more questions about 9/11. Mm. From there, he went to England. From there, he went to Yemen. In Yemen, he was the leader of al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula until he was killed by a drone strike. He was also the spiritual.
That's one of the good things Barack Obama did. Some people say Obama didn't do anything. Well, he did kill a number of terrorists.
Yeah, he did. And he actually, I think Rand Paul called for his impeachment because al-Awlaki was an American
citizen.
Yes.
So Rand Paul, not a paramount of wisdom and biblical knowledge.
No.
And there were other terrorists that al-Awlaki, who was an imam here in Denver, other terrorists that he interacted with.
Yes, he was the spiritual advisor to the Fort Hood shooter.
I would say the Fort Hood terrorist.
The Fort Hood terrorist.
Muslim terrorist.
He was definitely a terrorist.
Yeah.
The London subway bombers.
Oh, yeah.
And even after his death, his tapes inspired the San Bernardino terrorists.
Which we just recently, a few weeks ago, contacted the coroner's office there, asking for the autopsies of the two Islamic terrorist, and so far they're not being released, but hopefully we'll get those. So, Richard Blake, could we go to now this Denver Post article? I would like to step through the whole thing with you.
Sure.
Because you are, from talking to you, you've been at our church a couple times, you know more about this topic, the Denver connection to terror, than anyone else I've met. And so it's sort of like having the teacher next to you as you're reading the text. So right from the headline, the Denver Post is doing everything they can to downplay the terrorist connection with the Denver Islamic Society. I mean, the headline says Muslim cleric left little impression in Colorado. Little impression. I mean, come on. It's almost like they wanted to do a puff piece on the guy, but they couldn't quite swing that. So they begin by discussing this Muslim cleric turned terrorist leader. And actually, from the article itself, he's a terrorist leader while he's a Muslim cleric. But when this article was written, He had just been targeted for assassination by the U.S. government. He was a Colorado State University graduate who preached in the local mosques.
Yeah, he was also the president of the Muslim Student Association at Colorado State University. Muslim Student Association is a Muslim Brotherhood front. It was established by the Muslim Brotherhood, and it's on campuses all over the country. I urge anyone who has a child in a university to find which ones have Muslim student associations and not go to those colleges. Mm. They're the leaders, of course, in the anti-Israel
right.
actions that go on in the campuses.
So they give a bit of his background. He was born in New Mexico, but spent 11 years then in Yemen, where his father ended up being part of the Yemeni government. He graduated here in 1994 with a degree in engineering, civil engineering, and the Muslims that the Post was able to interview, they said that, you know, some were sensing the stirrings of radicalism in his speeches at the mosque, but we're going to get into a couple of his speeches here and the effect they had, including on one young guy who went off to Bosnia to join the jihad that Awlaki had convinced him to do, and the guy got killed. And so the stirrings of radicalism, I think that's a bit underselling the matter.
It definitely is. The Denver Islamic Society is having a charm offensive right now, and they're holding open houses and every third Saturday at their Denver Islamic Society, and they're not telling people the truth about Islam.
Well, of course.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Islam is that there are both peaceful and violent verses in the Quran. The ones that Muhammad made when he was in Mecca are the peaceful ones.
The earlier ones,
yeah.
Before he had power.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
right.
They were peaceful. And they're the ones that the Muslim apologists always bring up.
That was in Mecca, but then he ended up where? In Medina?
Medina, yeah, where he slaughtered the Jewish tribes there. Because they wouldn't join him in fighting the Meccans after he was raiding Meccan caravans. Mm. The Meccans decided to do something about him, and there was the Battle of the Trench. The Jewish tribes, which were tired of Muhammad at that point, they'd given him shelter, and he'd become a dictator there. They were tired of him, and so they did not help Muhammad fight the Meccans, and they were the men were beheaded. The women became children became slaves. The wife of the one of the Jewish tribe leaders became he made into a concubine. Now she poisoned him. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
Yeah, she poisoned him. He was never well after that, but he didn't die for 2 years. Still, Muslims do blame this Jewish woman for killing Muhammad, which probably is a part of Islamic anti-Semitism.
Just the part. So there are two sources that were interviewed by this Bruce Finley of the Denver Post for this article, and they're basically anonymous. The one, they give a first name, Najib, mm-hmm. if that's his real first name. And what struck me as, what are we talking to, government leakers here? Aren't these just people who go to a local religious house of worship? I mean, they're mosque goers, and they have to be anonymous.
Exactly.
So there's obviously fear involved by these people. But the first one, Najib, he says he's talking about Awlaki and the sermons he gave at the mosque. And he said what bothered him was what has been happening to Muslim people around the world, as though you really care about the sentiments of a terrorist. I actually don't.
Yes.
If some guy kidnaps women and rapes them, and you want to say, well, why were you mad at women? I mean, that's not a conversation to have.
No.
Not at all. It's despicable. But what's interesting about what has been happening to Muslim people around the world, from my perspective, is that Muslims flee the misery of Muslim countries. They go to the West if they can, and then they do everything they can to make their new homes as miserable as the places they immigrated from.
Yeah.
That's their pattern.
Yes, that is the pattern.
Escape the Muslim-run country to the West and try to make that as miserable as where you just left.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's what's been happening to Muslims around the world. And this Najib goes on to say, he always talked about how Muslims used to be the leaders of the world. And I somehow missed that part in my history lessons. But they were leaders of the Muslim world.
Yes.
And then of those, like the Ottoman Empire, of those Christian nations they were able to slaughter, invade, they were for a time.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't leaders of the Americas. They weren't leaders of Europe.
No, but they killed millions of Christians, Hindus, yes. Africans, Buddhists.
We did a show on this just a week ago here. I don't know if you heard that, on the Armenian massacre, the genocide by the Muslim Turkish army.
Yes.
Yeah, 1.5 million just in the 20th century.
Yes. There was another one in the 20th century also in Sudan.
Two to two and a half million
Christians were killed during the formation of South Sudan, the breakaway of South Sudan from Sudan.
Devastating.
Yes.
So, Richard Blake, it was the New York Times that broke the story that the Obama administration put Anwar al-Awlaki on our government hit list because they had the evidence for his links to the Fort Hood terrorist. And remember the terrorist who tried to blow up an airliner on Christmas Day bound for Detroit? They had Awlaki's connection to Umar Abdul Muttalib. So they decided, hey, let's drone this guy. In fact, a Democrat from California, Representative Jane Harman, chairwoman of the House Homeland Security Subcommittee, said he's probably the number one terrorist in terms of threats against America.
Yeah, after bin Laden, he was the number one target.
And so, and here he is, the local...
Yeah, he's the local...
The local guy preaching at the Denver Islamic Society.
Exactly. And no indication that I've seen that the Denver Islamic Society has changed any of its views. And as you know, zakat, Islamic tithing, 1/8 of it is earmarked for those who fight in the cause of Allah, who are not in regular armies. Of course, the, another 8 is for the imam and whoever who is administering zakat. But, yeah, 1/8 of Islamic tithe, any devout Muslim who pays zakat is also financing terrorism.
We have been talking about the Denver Islamic Society, but there's also the Colorado Muslim Council, CMC and the DIS. And the Colorado Muslim Council, the Denver Post, talked to a local Muslim who's a chaplain at the Denver jail. And that's horrifying because that's where they recruit into extremism. In which really it's our tax dollars rounding up a bunch of disgruntled people who are then vulnerable and preyed upon and become guilty themselves. But this guy, Taj Ashahid, is a spokesman for the Colorado Muslim Council. And he said, a lot of us, you know, we heard this guy. So he wasn't a secret, Awlaki.
No.
A lot of us heard this guy, and it's difficult to reconcile. I heard him out of his mouth repudiate terrorism. And so we've already talked about it's the hypocritical way they will pretend. It's sort of like the French underground operating when the Germans occupied France. There's certain things you have to say to keep operating.
Exactly.
But you're an operative.
Yes.
And so this Colorado Muslim Council spokesman says, you know, most people had the impression he was Western. His Arabic was really good. And he says, if this is true, like, if it's true, they should have known. I mean, he convinced one guy, they admit in the story, to go to Eastern Europe and join jihad.
Right.
So if it's true, I mean, come on. If it's true, he says, what happened? This is not who we listen to. Well, I have a hard time believing those denials.
Yes.
Richard, back up at Fort Collins, there's an Islamic center up there, and Awlaki, he would give the Friday sermons at their Islamic center, and so he was a somewhat known quantity even up there, including to a local professor who I think was a leader of the mosque.
Yes, he was, Moin Siddiqui. He talked, according to the article, Siddiqui's quote is saying he talked about the prophets, his knowledge of the prophets was good, and we encourage young people to come forward and share their ideas, encourage them to speak up. So,
yeah, sure, right. So when Barack Obama said 1,000 times over that these terrorists have nothing to do with Islam, nothing to do with the Quran, Well, this, one of the world's most notorious terrorists, had good knowledge of the prophets.
Yes.
He was a regular, welcomed speaker delivering sermons at the Islamic Center of Fort Collins out of the CSU campus up there, serving the campus.
Well, the leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, is an Islamic scholar. The question you could ask any Muslim who says that terrorism has nothing to do with Islam is, what is it in Islam that causes so many people to misinterpret it so badly?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a really good question, Richard. So after he graduates up in Fort Collins, it was the fall of 1995, Alaki moves to Denver. He got an apartment in housing that now is part of the University of Denver housing on York Street. And he would drive to the Denver Islamic Society mosque that's near DU. He was regularly attending there. That's the Al-Noor Mosque, is that right?
They call it the Al-Noor Mosque, yes. It's at 2124 South Birch, on Birch, just south of Evans.
Okay, and so while there, he didn't just go there to be a participant. He went there to deliver sermons and lectures. That was his gig. That's what he did.
Yes, and of course, recorded all those lectures that are now inspiring terrorists all over the world, continue to.
So one of the sources the Denver Post interviewed, who was there at the time, said that he was a good speaker. He looked people in the eye. He had this magic. And then the Denver Post reporter, in his own words, said, at Al-Noor, at the mosque, some worshipers sensed that Alaki had a political agenda. I mean, come on, sensed? In just a paragraph, we're going to get to the young guy who he convinced to go off to Bosnia to join the jihad, and the guy went and was killed.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, I pastor Denver Bible Church. The Denver Post hates us.
Yes.
They say we're extremists.
Exactly.
We've never talked anyone into going off to some foreign battlefield and getting killed.
No.
But the local mosques, they're above reproach, even though leading terrorists played significant roles at these mosques.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, they downplay this or they ignore the story.
Hmm. So here is our second anonymous source in this report. A former Denver Islamic Society leader who asked not to be identified. Now, that's just too much. I mean, what is this, international? This is the local, this is supposed to be a local mosque.
Exactly.
Why are there all these people afraid to talk?
I think you can understand why.
Yeah. So, and they say out of concern for his safety.
Exactly.
But it's not Christians are going to come after him.
No.
So it's Muslims killing Muslims that are the main problem with Islamic terror. And then they also try to kill Christians and Jews.
Right.
It's easier, though, for them to kill Muslims. It's just more convenient.
Yeah.
So he said that Alaki gave a series of sermons on jihads around the world, and he persuaded a young student, so he's here in America from Saudi Arabia, to go off and join Muslim fighters in Bosnia. And the young kid did it. I mean, he was killed, and maybe we'll talk about how he was probably killed in a moment, but this anonymous leader who's talking to the Denver Post, he says that he objected to Alaki encouraging this guy to go off and fight jihad. That's what he says.
Yes.
But you don't even have to read between the lines, because just read the lines and he wasn't really objecting.
The anonymous Islamic informant stated that when the student approached him, he told him Alaki's idea was nonsense. He said, no, you need to have permission from your parents before you go to jihad.
This is too much. Richard, this is like life imitating art, because we published a full-page ad, a letter to Donald Trump in the Washington Times for the morning, the first Monday morning he woke up in the White House. And in that ad, we published three ISIS memes. We call them ISIS memes. They show, here, I'll show it to you right now. They show the ISIS fighter with the Arabic writing and with the mask over his face, except for his eyes, with the bomb strapped to him. Mm-hmm. And it says, and we're showing the absurdity of pro-life regulations when they want to regulate the killing of children. And we're trying to show the irony of it, how absurd. Mm-hmm. Urging ISIS to anesthetize before a beheading. I mean, imagine how stupid that would be. And immoral.
Yes.
How absurd and what a waste of time and all that. It's the same thing with abortion. Anesthetize the baby before you dismember it. It's absurd. It's immoral. But then we had another one. It says urging ISIS to get parental consent before letting a minor join. That's exactly what this leader, this anonymous leader, was saying. His criticism of Awlaki is, he says, nonsense. You need to have permission from your parents before you go to jihad. So this guy, this is the good guy in the story.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the moderate.
Yeah, he's the one that the Post is puffing up there.
Yeah, right. In this puff piece, this wannabe puff piece, he's the good guy because Awlaki really made little impression when he was here in Colorado.
He's inspired terrorists all over the world. You can't underestimate Awlaki's influence.
And so the Denver Post calls it little impression. That's the headline. So this leader tells Awlaki then, he tells him, stay away from my group. He doesn't get him kicked out of the mosque.
No.
He doesn't put a stop to this. He just says, and he's probably lying anyway.
Yes.
But he just says, stay away from my group. I want them to have parental permission before they join jihad.
Exactly. Well, so, I mean, you need a note from your parents before you go on a field trip.
Yeah. So according to the Denver Post, what happened to this young guy?
Saudi student traveled from Colorado to Bosnia, and in 1999, he was killed in Chechnya.
Chechnya. Now, back then, we were on the radio back then.
Uh-huh.
The big news in that part of the world was the Russians bombing Chechnya because of atrocities. And at the time, there was this, like, breakaway Chechenian Muslim wannabe government.
Mm-hmm.
And they only had diplomatic relations with the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. And so that's who undoubtedly this terrorist, this junior terrorist, was fighting with.
Yes.
I mean, most certainly.
Most certainly.
So after this clash, I can't even believe the Denver Post could write the next sentence. After this clash with the leader of the Muslim community over Awlaki, over him trying to recruit young people to join jihad, they said after the clash, Awlaki asked for compensation and they agreed to pay him $800. So that really sounds like a condemnation.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
That's, yeah. I would like to be condemned that way a lot of times. So.
Oh, yeah, right. Something like that sort of happened to me once. I got $1,500. So this is this anonymous leader saying the trustees agreed to pay him. And that's what he admits there, the $800. We're out of time, Richard Blake. Could we continue this next week?
Yes, indeed.
We'll do part two of the Denver Islamic community's tie to Islamic terror, to Muslim terror. So thank you, Richard Blake. This is Bob Enyart. Our website, kgovkgov.com. May God bless you.